Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Thanks for tuning in today. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. Glad to have you listening. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Hour 2. So if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with Craig Von Buzek. It's our monthly feature, Grace and Truth, where we look at some of the high points of the news, and we talk about how to look at it through a biblical filter and how to pray the news. And it was a very engaging conversation talking about Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's recent speech, the current issue of ISIS, the 21 Coptic Christians who were martyred for their faith, and how we as American Christians can respond, can be praying. If you missed that first hour, I'm telling you every moment was very engaging. The podcast will be up on our website in just a little bit at myfaithradio.com. So now we're switching gears, talking to one of my favorite people on the planet, Erin Smalley. So glad to have her on today, talking about the various phases and stages of friendships. We're talking about girlfriends specifically. Now, I know, guys, that half of you are men listening. This is for you, too, because it'll help you to understand your wife. It'll help you to understand how we are. If there is a possibility of understanding us, you'll at least move in that direction. But it's really important to understand female friendships and even how they differ from male friendships. So I don't want to waste another moment. Let me tell you about my friend, and we'll get her on the show. Erin Smalley is a program director at Focus on Family. She's an author, speaker based in Colorado Springs. She works with her husband, Dr. Greg Smalley, doing marriage intensives and seminars. She and Greg live in Colorado Springs with their four great kids, Taylor, Murphy, Garrison, and Annie. And you can find her author page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Dear Erin, good to have you back on the program.
It's always a joy, Susie.
So good to see you. I'm telling you, I've been missing you, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we already did have a little catch up. You know, as
indeed. So, you know, you've been on the show plenty of times, Erin. Mm-hmm. We love to start out talking scripture, and I'm just wondering if there's a verse mm-hmm. that God's been putting on your heart.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, I just wrote a blog in Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Mm. And just wrote a blog all about that we, you know, we begin to view female friendships as optional. And truly, they are not optional. We are designed to connect specifically with each other as women. And it's so easy, especially, you know, you're busy, you're in, you know, work and family and on. It's easy to set those aside and view them as optional. And really, we have to have someone to pick us up. It's better when there's someone to be there to pick us up and lift us up and encourage us.
Indeed. And, you know, the tendency, isn't it, Erin, to isolate when we're mm-hmm. hurting? And I think there's so many dynamics that go into that. Sometimes it's self-protection. I don't want someone else to know I'm hurting. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's pride. I don't want you to know that I'm struggling. But mm-hmm. what happens, and how do we almost destabilize ourselves when we carry our burdens alone and we don't let others in on them?
Yeah, you know, it's so easy because the enemy is right there to just reinforce everything you just said. Plus, you know, that you are alone. Look, you are alone. Your greatest fear has come true now. Mm. And, you know, it really, the enemy will just continue to perpetuate that. And really embracing that we are created to be in relationship with others, but specifically in female friendships. And, you know, looking at the benefits of them, I just came across some new research. Of course, we know there's health benefits of being in good, healthy female friendships. But the new one I came across is that it actually helps our waistline.
Whoa.
It actually slims our waistline because having good female friends decreases our cortisol levels.
Is that right?
And so, yes. And so it takes that thickness away from our middle. So if nothing else, embrace that.
Rent a friend, 877-933-2484. Well, now tell me about this topic. You could write about a lot of things, but mm-hmm. you chose to write about girlfriends. Why did you do that?
You know, because for me, that is something that is, as an extrovert, something so key for me, that God created me so relational and I enjoy other women so much. And, you know, there's been different seasons of life where that's harder. And I'm, you know, right now in one that is a season that is harder for me to take the time to really reach out to other women. But just embracing that that's a reality. That's how I was created. But then, of course, I have three daughters. So I have a 21-year-old daughter, a 17-year-old daughter, so a senior in college, a junior in high school, and a first-grade daughter. And watching all of them desire female friendships. But, you know, just to be honest, you know, female friendships are great. But just to be honest, there are challenges and there's those times that they are very challenging. And, you know, I really wanted to be a good role model to my girls of how to walk through those difficult times. And so I did a lot of research and ended up writing a book.
Mm. And it's called Grown Up Girlfriends, Finding and Keeping Real Friends in the Real World. And in this book, you talk about, you identify different baskets.
Yes.
And I think this is very helpful for women because what I've noticed in my travels and even in my own life, there's times where you feel angst that you love this particular friend, but they're not in this particular sphere of friendship. I've always looked at it as spheres or circles sort of around me.
Right.
And the basket picture to me is even more helpful where you feel like I love them so much, but they're not that friend. They're this kind of friend. And I think you can really live with almost a frustration if you don't really identify what that is. So explain the basket analogy and how that helps us.
You know, it really helped me have appropriate expectations for different levels of intimacy in my life and to recognize that, you know, there's three different levels. Basket three are kind of those people that we share facts with, the women that we share facts with. There's like 20 to 100 women in that basket. And obviously all of those women cannot be our best friends. That's merely impossible. We would physically wear ourselves out. Then there's basket two. There's about 5 to 20 in that basket. It takes it a little bit deeper to the next deepest level of intimacy, but it's not at that deepest level. Like you're talking about basket number one, there's 1 to 5 women in that basket. And you know, if you have one friend at that level in your baskets, that's awesome. That's great. That's a gift. But the thing that helped me with these baskets is to recognize that things shift, things change. We experience losses. You know, for whatever reason, whether somebody moves, somebody goes back to work full time, or you just grow apart, you know, just naturally, sometimes we grow apart from someone, or there's a betrayal or a rejection, or maybe someone dies. I mean, these are all true losses that happen in female friendships.
Hmm. You know, I've said this to you before, but I have a good friend who says, I never get too excited about a friendship until we've had our first conflict, because then I know what the friendship is made of. And just as you and Greg constantly talk about that so many relationships and marriage break down because of how conflict is handled, would you say that that same is true about girl friendships, that there are friendships that maybe don't have to end, but conflict was handled poorly?
Yes, and sometimes that conflict is handled poorly, and then, you know, we're left wondering, what do we do? How do we handle this? And really, within Grown Up Girlfriends, I talk a lot about how do we do this in a way that honors us, honors them, and then honors the Lord, you know, really the greatest commandment.
Mm. Wow, so good. So talk about the different barriers to building friendships. You mentioned four: life transitions, personality, comfort zone, and busyness. And these are kind of, some of them are moving targets, I would say, life transition and busyness. I guess comfort zone and personality are kind of more very personally, you know, driven. So talk about that.
Right. You know, truly, there are different transitional seasons where we're going maybe from, you know, working full time to being home as a stay-at-home mom. You know, or maybe personality-wise, maybe you're more introverted and you're not as likely to reach out. Or maybe, you know, it's out of your comfort zone. You're just not comfortable, you know, really reaching out to a neighbor or reaching out to someone at work and taking the relationship to a deeper level. So whatever it is, it can limit us. Busyness, of course, is, you know, the massive one that we just, and we do it to ourselves is what I'm realizing, that, you know, we feel lonely, yet we're not willing to take the time to call someone, you know, and we're expecting them to call us, or they must be busy too. So, you know, I'm not going to take the time to do it. But really, we have choices in all of this, that even if our personality is more introverted, find an environment that you're comfortable in, maybe a smaller group. And, you know, just pick out one woman and ask her to have coffee within the next week, you know, or if you're in a life transition, find someone who's transitioning kind of at the same time you are, in the same way. you know, obviously our friends don't all have to be in the same seasons that we are. But if you're struggling with going into a new season, find someone who is maybe having the same struggles. If you're, you know, for the first time staying home, go to MOPS. I remember when I was staying at home and I had young kids, I would go to MOPS. And of course, moving, we moved a lot. I would go to MOPS and look for one woman who I would just watch kind of how she behaved and how she treated others and kind of her demeanor. And then I would ask, you know, would you like to get together for a play date or, you know, go to the park after MOPS, whatever, you know, just to take that step of initiating.
I like how you kind of are saying there's not a one size fits all because you are extrovert. I truly am more introverted as far as where my energy comes from. And I've seen you in party scenarios where you put on the party, you're managing the food and you're managing everybody and you are loving it. And I want to crawl in a hole, you know, but I will say when you and I are one-on-one, you're so very present, where sometimes extroverts are a little more breezy in one-on-one engagements. Why is that? I mean, maybe it's just something God's developed in you over the time that you've become a good listener and you're very, very present. But
oh, you're very sweet, Susie.
But no, that's just really true.
I'm blushing right now. But, you know, I think that's something that I've learned because, you know, extroverts, a lot of us verbally process, you know, we're talking to think and we have lots of words and we're, you know, maybe more engaging, you know, so it's easy to, you know, kind of control the conversation. I've become very aware of that and really worked at, you know what, I've said enough now and I really want to know this person. I don't want to just, you know, tell them who I am, but I want to know who they are. So I try to be aware of that and really try to be intentional about stopping myself and taking time to listen and asking questions. As a matter of fact, I just asked a friend the other day, do you experience me as that, as taking time to really seek to know you as well?
And what'd they say?
They said yes.
Thank you,
and
Lord.
I said, really? Do you just think I wish
surprised.
She would just be quiet?
Honestly, Erin, I think you're a great listener.
So, thank you.
Talking to Erin Smalley, when we come back, we're going to talk about identifiers maybe of not so healthy relationships and ways to guard your best friendships. If you've got some questions, we'd love to take them. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. More with Erin Smalley in a moment. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good friend Erin Smalley about grown-up girlfriends. And again, dudes, if you're listening today, this is for you, too, because it's really good for you to understand female friendships and why they matter. And, Erin, I want to talk to you about some of the negative behaviors that affect intimacy, because if there's one thing I learned from you Smalleys is that there are actually relationship skills we can learn that can make or break a relationship, whether it's marriage or friendship. And so I want to talk about these that you highlight in the book, the rival, the bloodsucker, the copycat, the controller, and the caretaker. So talk about the rival and this negative behavior, what it looks like in a friendship and what we can do about it.
You know, it's isn't it those names alone? I mean, yeah. Who wants to be labeled
exactly.
that?
Oh,
but
you're
yet
one
we
of those.
All have some of those in us.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, it's important just to recognize, you know, what that looks like in us and also to recognize what that looks like in others, because there are times that people's issues, you know, really don't mix well with ours. And we just have to become really great at becoming aware of, you know, okay, this is going to be a challenge. So I'm called to love. And, you know, I constantly tell my girls, you're called to love, but not intimately, not always in the basket number one. Mm. So, you know, sometimes that means taking a step back and loving from a distance. But, you know, there are these negative behaviors in relationships. You know, the rival is someone who, you know, is constantly competing with us and jealous. And, you know, that is just not something that's going to make a friendship thrive.
It makes it unsafe, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And, when we feel unsafe, our hearts close in relationship, and that alone can impact the relationship. That can devastate the relationship. You know, it's someone who wants, you know, your clothes. They want your friends. They want to compare their children to your children. And, you know, it's just exhausting. Mm. That can just be truly exhausting. And often we need to set a boundary around what is okay and what is not in a relationship. And it can mean shifting the basket, shifting the intimacy level. and thus developing appropriate expectations on our part of what this relationship is going to bring. Because the rival might be someone who's really fun. You know, you can go to the movies and have a really great time with them and laugh a lot, but they may not be the one that you can talk at that deep, intimate level with.
Would you try to address that? It seems like the best guess is that the rival is driven by insecurity. If she's really mm-hmm. trying to copy your identity, it's because she doesn't have a sense of her own identity. Is that mm-hmm. worth addressing, or is that, what do you do with that?
Well, it just depends on the relationship. Yeah. You know, really pray about that before you address something like that, because, you know, you never know where is that person at in their journey. And, you know, just to recognize we all are in a journey. We're all, you know, striving to become more like Christ. And if this person is, you know, in a more immature season yet, you know, that they are not yet pushing towards more maturity and security in the Lord, that, you know, if he's going to use you in that way, you know, iron sharpens iron, great. But ask him first.
Yeah.
And then, you know, also ask them, are you open to feedback? Are you open to, you know, what I'm experiencing you as, you know, and, you know, not to judge them, not to criticize them, but to do it in a way that's most likely to allow the conversation to go well.
Yeah. And you can sure see how if that person is humble and teachable, they just don't know that they're doing it, that there's a way to say, boy, if you could get a sense of your personality, your story, your tastes, you would start to love those the most because God made you uniquely you, not to be like me. And that could be a real wonderful
right.
wake-up call. But if that person's not ready for it, that could drive a permanent wedge anyway. So
completely.
It does take
completely.
Some discernment. Okay, how about the bloodsucker?
Oh, boy. you know, this is someone who you just don't feel like you can ever meet all of their needs. And again, there are limitations to what we can give, what we're actually called to give. We don't want to try to fill holes in someone's heart that God is meant to fill, or maybe their husband is meant to fill. We can only do what our purpose is, what God is calling us to in that relationship. So it may not be what they're wanting, and thus boundaries are going to need to be set in place. And, you know, again, they may not be aware of it. I've been through seasons where I don't know that I would have been considered a bloodsucker, but needy, you know, going through seasons of lots of loss and, you know, maybe being a little bit more high maintenance in that way. And, you know, it's not wrong. It's interesting. I've been in communication with a friend who really has a hard time advocating for her needs, like speaking up and saying, you know, I'm sad today and I really could, you know, could you get a cup of coffee? She doesn't want to be a burden. So it's almost the exact opposite of a bloodsucker. And so it's not wrong to let people know where we're at. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's when it goes to the extreme unhealth side that we're, you know, we're expecting them to meet all of our needs and we're never going to be enough.
You know, you make a really good point. I mean, I'm thinking of times in my early years of marriage when just crisis was abounded, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you could come off as a bloodsucker because your needs are so great.
Uh-huh.
But is that different? It feels like it's different, a season of neediness where
yes.
you're still, you can maybe approach your neediness in a healthy way where you're not
yes.
expecting everybody to meet your needs versus a person
right.
who's going, it totally is up to you to validate
mm-hmm.
me. Make the distinction there.
You know, absolutely. There's an unhealthy dependence with someone who is a bloodsucker. They're, you know, it's very, you know, it's all about you meeting my needs. And it's, you know, it just, I'm guessing you can just feel it. Versus, you know, there are seasons where a friend is going to go through needy times. They're going to have a lot of needs. And I always say that's the beauty of the baskets, of having different levels of intimacy, because then as a community of women, we can come alongside of each other. And then, you know, if one person is trying to meet all the needs when someone's in crisis, they're going to wear out.
Yeah.
They're going to, you know, burn out. And it's awesome when you have, you know, one that is that deep, intimate level and they can go and, you know, talk at that deep, intimate level and understand what the needs are, because then they can say, you know what, here's our full group, our full circle of support. And then, you know, say, hey, you know, would you mind taking a meal? Would you mind, you know, picking kids up? Would you mind helping clean the house? Whatever it is, it's amazing to me how as women we can come alongside of each other during those times of need. And, you know, what we can honestly accomplish is amazing.
Mm. And thinking about that person, you and I were talking at the beginning of the show about we can tend to isolate because we don't want to be a mm-hmm. burden. If we mm-hmm. do isolate because we don't want to be a bloodsucker, just in our self-protection, we
yes.
can miss out on a chance to be in community. And so it's just, I guess it's always a check and balance, isn't it? That,
yeah,
you know, and also that's on me and on you. It's like, if I'm giving to you to the point that the grace has lifted and I'm resenting that I'm giving to you, that's on me. That's not on you, right?
Right. You know, I mean, check your heart, because there's also the side of that we give so we feel better. You know, and that's really comes down to codependency, that we're really giving in the guise of, you know, really taking care of ourselves. We're acting like we're taking care of you, but really it's us that's getting our needs met by taking care of you. And so just, you know, continually check your heart. Where are you? And there's times that I'll step back and think, wow, I just snapped at them and said something really unkind. And what's going on in my heart? Because that's an indication that something is going on. And even just this week, there's been a lot of stress. And so on Tuesday, I thought, you know what? I am staying home for a couple hours this morning, and I'm going to exercise, and I am going to spend some time in front of that fireplace with my Bible and the Lord, because I needed to get my heart right.
Wow. And that is, again, it's our responsibility to care for our heart, to be checking our motives. And it's so easy to shift our weight of dependence on people and have them do the work for us. But, you know, then people become a source and not a gift, and they're never meant to be. And we put an unnecessary drain on them. Okay. So the copycat sounds like it's the rival in a way. How is it different?
You know, that they truly are lacking their own identity. And you know that it's different in that the rival is competing with you, but the copycat really doesn't know who she is and wants to be you. It's a little concerning, because really, as you said, God created us each uniquely and individually in his image. We are daughters of the Most High King. And really it's, you know, continually, and again, this is a self-assessment of, you know, am I embracing who God made me to be? Am I, you know, celebrating the gifts that he gave me and really engaging in relationships in that way, not being jealous or, you know, envious of someone else's gifts? God made me unique. And as women, so often we are competing with each other. Mm. We are, you know, comparing ourselves to each other. And, you know, I saw a piece on this morning news show, and they were talking about that so often it's not other people, you know, especially in the workplace, it's not the men, it's, you know, often it's other women who sometimes are in the same season that we are, that are bringing us down.
Yeah.
And it, you know, we've got to really recognize, this is who I am. That's who they are. And, you know, let's be encouraging to one another about who we are, and encouraging about, you know, the gifts that you see in them, and really calling those out. I went to a retirement lunch yesterday, and it was the sweetest thing. This woman is phenomenal. She comes to her retirement lunch, and she has gifts for every single person that came.
Oh, my.
Not just a gift. She has a note card where she took a picture of each person off of Facebook, put it on the card, wrote their name, and then she wrote what she sees in them.
My.
And I literally, yesterday was just one of those one of those harder days. And I got the card, I opened it up, beautiful necklace that she gave me. And when I started reading the card, I just started crying, because sometimes I think in our own, where we're at, for whatever reason, it's been busy, it's been, you know, exhausting, you know, we've been beaten down by critical words, whatever it is, that sometimes we forget who we are, who we were made to be. And it's so amazing when we have a sister in Christ come alongside of us and say, this is what I see in you. And I needed that yesterday. It was such a gift.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that story.
That.
Wow. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the other two, the controller and the caretaker, and such good information about even guarding our heart, watching our motives, and being a source of life to other people. Talking to Aaron Smalley about healthy, godly friendships. More with Aaron in just a moment. That song. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my friend Aaron Smalley about friendships among girls, among women. And as I said, man, this is for you too, because it'll help you understand us even just a little bit more. If you've got questions about friendships, navigating those waters, we'd love to hear from you. 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, or you can email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. And I was looking at these negative behaviors, Erin, that you listed in the book. They really go back to, I mean, we all have the capacity to behave in these ways, but to me, it seems like they all go back to when we shift our weight onto our friendship, where we're expecting our friendship to be something that God says, no, I'm the only one who intended to be that for you. So we've covered the rival, the bloodsucker, the copycat, and the final two are the controller and the caretaker. And again, looking to the friendship to meet a need that maybe isn't ours to get from them. So what's the controller look like?
You know, the controller, it's sometimes someone who wants to make all of the decisions in the relationship. You know, where
on
are we going
terms?
For lunch?
Okay.
Yes, you know, simple as that. To, you know, that it's a fear of losing the relationship. And I see this probably equally as often, that we're afraid that we're going to lose the relationship. So we begin to micromanage it and try to control everything about it. And, you know, really it's repelling in a relationship, because when somebody feels like you're trying to control them, control who they're interacting with, or control, you know, what they're doing, it just has a sense, and it makes you just really begin to sense that something is not right in this relationship. Something is wrong. And it just doesn't, you know, most people don't like to be controlled.
And I would bet the most common response to the controller is the person just fades away. And this person
exactly.
is left wondering, going, why can I never be successful in friendships, you know?
Yep, completely.
Wow.
Completely. It's destructive.
And so talk to the person who's listening going, okay, is that me? What are some identifying factors other than controlling the circumstances and trying to micromanage how the friendship goes? Anything else that would identify if they're approaching this from a controlling fashion?
You know, sometimes it seems that a woman, you know, if you start feeling, you're wanting to control, but when it's not working, then you start distancing yourself and almost punishing that person and avoiding the interaction, you know. Just be aware, you know, check in, you know, what's going on with me? I wonder why I'm doing this. You know, why is it that I want to connect with this person so desperately, you know, at the cost of other relationships, you know, trying to keep her from, you know, interacting with so-and-so or connecting with so-and-so, or, you know, it's just good to step back and go, what's going on for me? You know, it might be that you're in a season where you've had loss, or maybe you just went, you know, you went through a relationship shift and you lost a dear basket number one friend through betrayal. And so you're feeling unsafe and out of control. So you step into this new relationship and you want to try to control it. I mean, it makes sense. And instead of judging it and, you know, keeping your heart shut down, you know, really just seek to understand that.
Yeah.
Go to a mentor, a godly woman, a counselor, and just talk about what's going on for you. And, you know, really work at putting a name to it. You know, I'm feeling out of control right now, because really what that's going to do is it's going to help you to really de-escalate that emotion and get clear on what it is. Spend time talking to the Lord about it. You know, so often we want to act like we don't have these icky feelings, you know, especially as Christian women, you know, we don't have these behaviors, these dysfunctional behaviors, these unhealthy behaviors, but we're human and we do. And there's times we turn toward them when we're not turning toward the Lord to meet whatever hole has been left. And, you know, as human beings, we are going to hurt each other. And as women, we are going to hurt each other, sometimes intentionally and sometimes not. But, you know, just to continually check in with what's going on for me. And then, you know, be willing to ask your friend, what's going on for you? This is what I'm noticing. Not judging, but just, you know, I'm noticing this behavior. And, you know, can you help me understand what's going on for you? What's this feeling like for you?
And wouldn't it be kind of wise when we look at our friendships, especially if we notice some of these efforts that are leaving us unsettled? What am I so afraid of, and whose opinion matters too much? Because I just think those are good personal inventory questions. Think it all the way through. Does their opinion matter and their acceptance matter so much that you've almost idolized it? And does the friendship, I mean, you can turn a friendship into an idol, and it's just worth looking at, and because it's not good for them and it's not good for you.
No, I couldn't agree more.
So this fifth one is the caretaker. What does that look like?
Mm-hmm. Touched on it a little bit, but it, you know, really, again, it's a negative caretaker. Hmm. It takes control of her friend in order to meet her own needs.
Okay.
Not the needs of her friends. You're really getting your own needs met by taking care of her. Sometimes a woman will step in and say, you know what? I can do this best for you. You know, I need to be the one to pick up your kids. I need to be the one to, you know, help you out when you're out of town. No one else can fill that role because I do it the best. And really what that's about, it's about her and getting her own needs met by taking care of others. And it is an unhealthy pattern. I mean, it's great when we give, but again, it goes back to the heart. And, you know, where is your heart? Is it that you're fearful of losing this relationship? So you're caretaking to an extent that is unhealthy. And, you know, how's that impacting your life? Are you not taking great care of your own family so you can take care of this other person? And, you know, just continually step back and evaluate, why am I doing this? You know, what's going on? What's going on for me?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what happens when one friend wants to go deeper in the friendship, but the other one doesn't? And maybe it plays out in some of these different ways. But what do they do if they feel constantly frustrated that, boy, I want more from her than she wants from me, or I want more of an intimate friendship than I'm getting from her? What should she do?
You know, I get this question a lot, especially around the baskets. You know, if you have someone in your basket number one, does that mean that you're automatically in theirs? And it is not always the case. Often they don't match up.
Wow.
But I think when we step back and we look at what is the purpose of this person in my life, regardless of what level of intimacy they're at, you know, what purpose does God have? We want to believe that it's so haphazard and, you know, that we just, you know, so happen to live next door to, you know, Susie, who, you know, has this gift and this amazing godly character. And that's something that I'm really wanting in my life. You know, well, let's look at the purpose of that and be intentional about it. And there is, you know, it is appropriate to go to that person and say, hey, I really admire this about you. I really desire to spend more time with you. I really desire to take this relationship to a deeper level. The thing that we have to be aware of is when we're making a request, the answer might be no. You know what? No, I really don't have time right now. No, I really can't do that right now. My plate is overflowing, you know, whatever it is, you know, but to be willing to take that risk, because if we don't take those risks, then we never can reach that deep intimate level that we're desiring.
Yeah. And that's right. Risks are involved in intimate friendships, but the risk is there in that it could possibly go a way you don't want it to. And what about the friendship? I hear this, and I've actually experienced this as well, where someone is constantly frustrated with you because they want more than you can actually legitimately give, which makes you want to go away the other way, because it's like you get tired of feeling like such a constant disappointment. But it's like, this far, no more. I got no more for you. I mean, what do you do about that?
You know, that is a tough one. I think we've all been in that situation, or maybe we've been that person, you know, depending on the season. Let's just be honest that we all are capable of all of this. You know, we are all capable of dishing it out as much as we are that we've experienced it. And so if there's someone who's, you know, constantly wanting more, disappointed, you know, bring that to their attention. You know, hey, can I share something with you? This is my experience of you. It's not saying that you are needy. It's not saying that you are dysfunctional. It's saying I'm experiencing you in this relationship right now as, you know, really demanding. Like I don't feel like I can really add up to what you're needing. And, you know, even setting the boundary of really, I can't do that right now. This isn't going to work for me right now. It's okay to say that. And then, you know, have the dialogue of what would work. You know, how can we find something that would work? You know, I can't have coffee with you, you know, 3 times a week. I've got to go to work. You know, well, maybe we could have coffee once a week. You know, so what is that going to look like? You know, be willing to take that risk, to be honest. I think so often as women, we kind of tiptoe around what's really going on. And what I'm learning, thank the Lord, in my later 40s is, you know, that to really ultimately to get what we want that deeper level of connection. We have to be willing to be honest. And sometimes it hurts to hear the response. Sometimes it hurts to say something, to set the boundary. But amazingly, if it's a healthy relationship, it can be taken to a very deep level of connection as you work through these intimate issues. And again, not everyone is meant to be at that intimate level. Mm-hmm. And so it's discerning and praying that through and looking for the purpose and, you know, just looking at the bigger picture and trusting God in it and knowing that He is there for you always.
Love that. Well, you wrote that women are typically perceivers, which means our perceptions can tend to drive our feelings. And I thought that was so good because we can make or break our day based on what we perceive, and what we're perceiving can possibly be wrong. And you said that you used to think that your perceptions were 100% accurate. But, and I bet someone reading that going, you mean they aren't? You know, because
yeah, I know.
We always think our perceptions are accurate. But you said once you realized that, it was a game changer in the way that you showed up with relationships, and you sort of learned to reframe and even rethink some of the things you were perceiving that tended to have a negative spin on them. I want you to unpack that a little bit more, if you would.
You know, it's even as you're saying that, I can remember having this conversation with my husband, Greg, who, you know, is a jokester in and of himself. But I remember him looking at me going, Aaron, really? You really think you what you perceive is 100% accurate? And this was in my late 20s. I was like, yeah, I really do. I really think what I am perceiving is 100% accurate. And he just kept saying, Aaron, what if you're wrong? And I was like, well, then I'm wrong. But, you know, it was just such a great awareness. And this is something that I've learned. So it's something that, you know, listeners can learn to really just step back and go, you know what? I could be wrong. You know, amazingly, I could be wrong.
It's a
minute chance. the scary thing is I'm realizing I'm wrong more often than I'm right. And so much of our perceptions that we're having have to do with what's going on for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, where we're at emotionally and, you know, what we're wanting to see in that person.
Yeah.
So often what we see is what we're looking for.
Wow.
And so if you're believing that this person is betraying you, gossiping about you, not supportive, you're going to find the evidence in that. There's a fancy term called confirmation bias. And basically, whatever you're looking for, you're going to find your bias is going to be confirmed. So whatever it is you're looking for, you will find it.
And you think about we take slights, we react in our brains and in our hearts to those slights. And what's really true is these people aren't thinking about us nearly as much as we think. Sad to say,
isn't
right?
That the truth?
Yeah.
You're not
as big of a deal as you think you are. I'm just saying.
So, yes.
Yeah, when we come back, though, Aaron, I want to talk with you about that whole negative belief system, because I thought that was so good that when we have a negative perception, there's actually ways to reframe that before we ever let it play out into a conflict. And that's huge, right? And
absolutely.
So let's talk about that when we come back. Talking to Aaron Smalley, having a great conversation. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Joy, light in my soul. The joy, making me whole. Though I'm broken, I am running into your arms of love.
Love that song. Boy, do I love music. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. That was a little tangent there. So we're talking about girlfriends, friendships, such important stuff with Aaron Smalley. My brother Greg just texted me and he said, I'm just saying, if you guys were more like us guys, things would be less complicated. Just saying. So, Greg, if you were near, I would bend your fingers back. I'm just saying. Anyway, God made us different. And before we get into this negative belief thing, there is a distinction between male friendships and female friendships, and there needs to be. So maybe say a word about why that is.
You know, we just are made so different.
Yeah.
You know, every time I think of that, it makes me laugh because why did he do that?
Yeah.
I mean, why did God do that?
Yeah.
But we are. But the beauty is that because he made us different, we accentuate each other so well. And God knew what he was doing and he said it was good.
Mm.
And, you know, but as women, we like to connect verbally. Our purpose in connection is totally different. We want to connect deeply relationally and, you know, verbally. And, you know, it's not the same for a guy. A guy is much more about, you know, a purpose, fixing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Functioning. And, you know, they like to do things together. So they might like to, you know, go, you know, skiing or hiking or whatever. We enjoy that stuff. But, you know, for me, when I am, you know, just feeling like I really need that deep connection with a friend, sitting across from them with a warm cup of coffee, a peppermint mocha or something, you know, there's just something awesome about that. Mm. And that's, it's so, you know, it's just so different because for Greg, that would do nothing for him,
yeah.
You know,
he'd get twitchy.
And we have to be careful to not expect our husbands to be our, you know, be like our girlfriends. They meet such a different need. We can't allow our girlfriends to take away from our marriages. We have to understand that, you know, really it's very different. Our female friends meet very different needs than our husbands do. And we don't want to try to create something that our female friends are meeting the needs our husbands should be meeting. Mm-hmm. Yet we don't want to put that on our husbands to meet needs that they're not created to.
Yeah. And I remember Craig Groeschel, I've had him on a few times, but it was a big breakthrough in their marriage when he said, listen, I'm not going to do a Beth Moore Bible study with you. I'm a guy. I'm not a girl. And it was like the light bulb went on for her to go, wait a minute, I'm expecting him to be a Bible study girlfriend, and he's not. I thought that was so funny.
You know, although I have trained my husband to really enjoy Hallmark movies with me.
Yes, well, that's amazing.
Hallmark movies. He does enjoy them.
Yeah, he wouldn't admit it, but he's sitting there smiling.
He would kill me for saying that on the air, but, you know, I know he
just
said things about
us.
Me, too.
Indeed. Yeah. Yes. Payback, baby. All right.
Yeah.
So one of the things you said is a grown-up friend is aware of negative beliefs and gives her friend the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Before we get into this, so a few steps that you guys have outlined for reframing things, talk about what this negative belief is and how it can really creep into the best of friendships and ruin them if we don't watch it.
It is so true, Susie, and I've seen it time and time and time again, because as soon as we start to perceive something and we start believing that this is what is really going on without even checking it out with the other person, you know, being aware of what's going on for us. Maybe we're feeling a little jealous, a little insecure, you know, and that's, again, often we want to sweep that under the rug and say, you know, I don't feel that, you know, I don't feel jealous or, you know, but we do, we're humans, you know, and we're competitive in nature. And so, you know, just continually be aware of what is it that I'm believing about them. And if it's negative, you're going to find the evidence for that in everything they do. Mm-hmm. And so if you start perceiving negative things in your friendship, you know, just have that be like a light bulb moment to go, oh, I'm, you know, maybe forming some negative beliefs about them. And the thing that I want to encourage women to do is to fight for your relationship, fight for that friendship. And, you know, check it out. Like we were talking about, you know, I learned very quickly that my perceptions were not always accurate. And how my lens that I'm seeing them through can be shaded by, you know, and jaded by, you know, being exhausted, feeling insecure, you know, maybe, you know, I've had a painful relationship with another friend, or maybe things in my marriage aren't going well, whatever it is, it impacts how we're going to see people.
Mm, okay. And so let's outline these four suggestions that Greg wrote about in the book, The Marriage You Always Dreamed Of. And the reason we're doing this, and you outline them in your girlfriend's book, because here again are skills that really do transfer. And so the first one is develop an I could be wrong attitude towards others. Say more.
Yes. You know, we kind of talked about this a little bit that, you know, just give this person the benefit of the doubt to think, you know what I'm seeing right now and what I'm perceiving, it may not be accurate. So, you know, it's a humble attitude of, you know, this may not be right. This may not be their intention. This may not be what they meant when they said that. You know, it's a tentative stance of I might be wrong. Mm. And, you know, 1 Corinthians 14:20, I was reading this verse earlier. Do not be children in your thinking, yet in evil be infants, but in your thinking be mature.
Excellent.
There's so much in that verse that, you know, we don't want to stay at that infant level. Mm. We don't want to, but we want to mature in our thinking and, you know, and you know, really trust him, continually growing in him. That's why we called the book Grown Up Girlfriends, because we want to mature in all ways, you know, in our mind, in our heart, in our behavior. We want to show up differently. And hopefully I'm a very different friend at, you know, in my late 40s than I was in my early 20s.
Paul even said, from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. And so to have a divine perspective is to press past it. And I love that just developing the I could be wrong attitude opens the door for God to move in. But we, so often, if we play it forward, we perceive, we judge, and then we decide. And then we have a fight in our minds, and they don't even know we're thinking about
them. They have no idea.
Yeah,
they have no clue.
And then we're not taking our thoughts captive and making them obedient, and we're being led astray by them. So that just practicing that could say, save a friendship. The next one you say is substitute more reasonable responses for the negative thoughts. Unpack that for us.
You know, this is something that as I became aware that I might be wrong. Okay.
She says
Greg,
it quiet.
Yes.
I
might be wrong. That, you know what, really then stepping back and going, you know what? And this is part of, this is something again that we can learn to do and choose to do. That as we step back and say, you know what, I'm not sure what was going on, but maybe they were tired. You know what? Maybe they had a hard day. Maybe they really didn't mean that to be come across critical. You know, they didn't call me, but maybe, you know, maybe their car broke down. I don't know. You know, so it's really giving them the benefit of the doubt and just allowing, you know, the positive thinking to impact then how we're going to behave toward them. And really what it's doing is it's guarding our hearts in that relationship, because it, when we're perceiving and, you know, believing and then acting negatively in ultimately acting negatively in a friendship, it's going to close our heart down toward them. And so a part of fighting for this relationship is to guard our hearts.
And don't you feel like, I mean, what you're suggesting here is obedience to God. It pleases his heart. So there's a yes in it for God, for you too. So I just believe the Holy Spirit's going to help you do this, because this to me is a step of obedience. This is how we love one another as he's loved us. He gives us the benefit of the doubt. He knows all things. And even when our hearts are in the wrong place, he sends mercies and grace to get us on the right track again. So there's something about this that I think God is with you when you're wrestling for a right perspective. Okay, the third one is check out the accuracy of your negative thinking. How do you do that?
You know, just even saying that sometimes that can make your heart race a little bit, especially as a woman, because we avoid, you know, we want to view this as confrontational and, you know, it's going to be this big, deep, intense thing. And it doesn't have to be. You know, simply we can just bring it up and say, hey, I want to check something out with you. You know, ask your friend for insight on what's going on for them. What was this? You know, this is what you said to me. And, you know, it really, it left me feeling criticized. And, you know, I actually had this interaction with a friend a couple of weeks ago and just said, you know, it really left me discouraged. And I called her and I just said, you know, we had a great breakfast, but I left discouraged because when you said this, it took me down this bunny trail. And I said, I know the enemy's part of this. You know, he's playing mind games on me. I said, but it would really help me to hear you say, just to say, tell me what you really meant. And she's like, oh, my word, no. You know, that's not what I meant. I was actually trying to encourage you. But isn't it interesting that the enemy would twist that and, you know, and come after me in this area of, you know, that I was struggling in.
Wow.
And, you know, and so often we don't recognize that the enemy hates it when we're connected in our marriages. He hates it when we're connected in community. And he especially hates, you know, godly female friendships, because he knows what we're capable of, Susie.
Yes.
Together we can accomplish amazing things when we're both striving in one direction. And so go to your friend. It doesn't have to be confrontational. You know, I've noticed this, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is. Can you help me understand what's going on?
Excellent.
That's
you know, when you do that, I'm sure even with this friend you're talking about, they feel like this makes Erin that much safer of a friend because I know she's going to come to me and ask me. And then, and then that allows that person to relax a little bit more and give you the benefit of the doubt, because we're all going to say stupid things at times and step on each other's toes. And there's nothing like somebody in your circle who's like, I have a history with you. I have knowledge of who you are. I'm not going to be so offendable that I jump on this one thing and write you off. And yet people are so quick to do that. Well, the last one.
So true.
Yeah. Sorry about this. We're running out of time and I want you to pray. But the last one is keep track of positive behavior. What do you say there?
This is so, I mean, it's so relevant and can completely change what your relationship is looking like. You know, write down just a quick list of what do you love about this person? You know, what is it that drew you to be really good friends with this person? What is it you admired about them? You know, especially in our negative thinking, then we can start, you know, switching each of those to the negative perspective versus what it was that we loved about them. And in our society, it's too easy to discard friends. You know, so often we pray for new ones. Look at the ones God has brought you and build into those and don't walk away just because things get hard.
Such a good word. Your wonderful pastor, Brady Boyd, who's been on the show many times, said something that I'm still thinking about. He said, you know, it takes a long time to make an old friend. Isn't that good?
Oh,
love
that's
that.
So good.
And
we
as,
love him.
As we wrap up, I love him too. As we wrap up, I wonder if you pray for that person listening today who maybe is quick to quit because of self-preservation, that they would have the grit and the humility to hang in there and work through some hard conversations. Would you pray for that friend listening?
Yes. Lord Jesus, we lift that woman that's out there listening today, Jesus, that might be feeling lonely. You know, the enemy's all over that, wants to lead us to the place that we believe we are alone, but we're not. Lord, we are have you, and you created us to be relational beings, so you bring people across our path, Lord. So I ask that you help this woman to reach out. Lord, if her feelings have been hurt, Lord, just help her to see, you know, the other perspective, understand what her friend might be going through, what's going on for her. Lord, help her to come to you and just talk to you about it. Mm. And Lord, prepare that other woman's heart for a simple conversation. Doesn't have to be a big deal. And, you know, Lord, we just love you. We thank you for creating us to be in relationship with each other. In your precious and holy name, amen.
Amen. Erin, always love talking with you. Thanks for joining us today.
It was so fun, Susie.
Always. Title of her book, again, is Grown Up Girlfriends. So glad you tuned in, and we'll meet you back here next time.